Hello, everybody, and welcome to How to Grow Your Entrepreneurial Brain, Wire Your Brain for Business Success. I'm Brain Coach Brad, and let's start right off by saying, what do I mean by growing your entrepreneurial brain? Sounds like a funny thing. So here's what's going on. The brain of successful entrepreneurs is measurably different from successful managers and also from unsuccessful entrepreneurs. So it's basically different from anybody except successful entrepreneurs. And it's possible to take the steps to develop your brain to be more like that. So you can think like a successful entrepreneur. You can respond to business situations like a successful entrepreneur. You've literally conditioned the habits of a successful entrepreneur in your brain so you can get that same success yourself. So let's talk about what to expect today. I will comment that I recognize a number of people from other teleclasses and from other programs I've done. So first, two comments for repeat listeners. Those of you who have been in any of the workshops I've done about distraction and managing focus, I'd encourage you to use the Penny Stack tool on the phone today. Those of you who are not familiar with that may pique your interest, but I'll simply ask you to do whatever you need to do to remind yourself to stay focused during this time, because distraction is one of the most destructive brain patterns for entrepreneurs. So if you want to get the most out of the call today, do what you need to do to stay focused. The second thing, especially for those of you all who have been on this exact program or other programs of mine before, I'm going to remind you that implementation is really what changes the brain. So be asking yourself, what can you do to take action? Listen to each section from the perspective of, what haven't I implemented yet that I can start today? Here's what to expect today. We're going to be doing three basic areas. First thing I'm going to do is what I call a Cliff's Notes of the brain, the nuts and bolts of how the brain works. Now, I could talk about the brain and entrepreneurial brain in particular for much more than an hour just by itself. So I'm happy to answer any questions during the question and answer period on that. I know that people, you're entrepreneurs, you're here to help your business be successful, so you want the practical piece. So I'm going to focus on the practical piece. So the Cliff's Note is going to be fairly short, and I'm happy to answer any additional questions afterwards, especially the ones that will help you take action. Then what we'll do is we'll go into the research that eliminates the difference in the brain of successful entrepreneurs. There are a number of those differences, and in today's call, I'm going to be focusing in on how research shows that successful entrepreneurs' brain is different when they are responding to situations that are potentially risky to them. And we'll talk about what that is, but that risk is an inherent part of building a successful business, and successful entrepreneurs' brains look different when they're dealing with that. Then we're going to talk about, well, what do you do with that? How do you grow your brain to be like that? I'm going to give you a three-step process to actually start to grow your brain like that and talk about what's the best way to implement it. We'll go into detail about what's the best way to put that process into practice. And at the very end of the call, I'm going to give you kind of a bonus, a method to immediately reduce the stress in your business. And it's one of my favorites because it's kind of outrageous and a little bit shocking. You need a sense of humor for this one. So that's the last thing I'll give you, is a very simple, easy way that today you can put into place to reduce stress in your business. So you're going to walk away with a clear picture of how to grow your entrepreneurial brain to immediately raise your level of business success. To do that, some of you know me, some of you already trust me and understand what I can say that will really help your business, and others of you are wondering, who is Brain Coach Brad? Who is anybody who would have people call him Brain Coach Brad, and why should I listen to him? How can he help my business? So I wasn't always Brain Coach Brad. My story begins, like all of our stories, what do they say, long ago and far, far away. But for me, it really was, because I grew up in Japan. I was the son of a successful American businessman. He was a pioneer in electronics and the field of total quality management. So I grew up learning about business around the dinner table, starting 6, 8 years old. I can remember learning total quality management principles. I didn't know what those were, but I was learning about business around the dinner table. I was learning without even knowing I was learning, you know, what that's like. But business wasn't all I learned. My father left the house at about 6 a.m. every day to commute into Tokyo to beat the traffic. He often wasn't home until 8:30 or later at night. And I learned, without knowing I was learning it, I learned that being a successful business person meant not being with your family. And I remember at 12, 13 years old, something like that, I swore I'd never be in business. Fast forward 20 years, I got a master's degree in philosophy, starting my fascination with the brain and with thinking systems. Got a master's degree in mental health, became a therapist. A funny thing happened to me while I was working as a therapist in a crisis response agency. I got the opportunity to grow a for-profit entrepreneurial venture that was initially part of that and then spun off as its own company. And I loved it. I loved the excitement, the possibility. All my old business learnings came back. I helped co-found a company that would grow to be a national crisis response company, a multi-million dollar company, 120 plus employees across multiple states. But the business learnings weren't the only things that came back. I still had those old beliefs down deep about business interfering with relationships. And I'm sure you know from experience what happens when you try to do something with conflicting beliefs. It interfered with my business and with my relationships. I struggled with focus and completion. I was really creative and excited, but I wasn't always able to put into practice all the things that I knew. So I decided to find the answer. I went back to the mind, again, the mind, the brain, my initial learning. So I started studying therapy again, studied neuro-linguistic programming, learned from Tony Robbins, a number of other people in that field, and it really helped. I helped grow the business, and I helped people as a therapist, too. After 9/11, I was called back to New York to work with NYPD who were suffering from post-traumatic stress. And I made a difference in my business and with many, many people in crisis. But what kept hanging me up is I still didn't have control over my own beliefs and habits. So I returned to my fascination with the brain. And that's when it all opened up for me. Because in the last 20 years, there's been a complete change in our understanding of the brain. And that understanding allowed me to use my experience to read the research, the new research, and to turn it into strategies to change my own limiting beliefs and brain patterns. So I started using myself as a guinea pig, my own brain coaching client, if you will. At one point, in 2 days, I wiped out a 20-year habit of constantly saying or when I spoke. If you'd heard me in the years past, even when I was a professional speaker, you would have noticed that I would constantly say or. In another week, I wiped out a 30-year habit of tearing at my fingernails down to the quick. In fact, true story, growing up, I had never even used fingernail clippers in my life, because I always ripped at my nails and I hated it and cut open my open it down to the quick and things, but I didn't know how to break it. But once I understood how the brain worked, I was able to use these techniques on myself and to wipe out these things. And in my brain health and coaching clinic in Portland, Oregon, Lifetime Optimization, where I'd been using neurofeedback, brainwave of optimization is what it's called, very powerful technology. I've been working with people with sleep and anxiety and attention deficit issues. What I was able to do is to start to use the brain research strategies and to add to that, and so to use the strategies to wipe out anxiety and limiting beliefs and change people's habits. And I realized that a lot of our best clients were entrepreneurs because the brain patterns of anxiety and attention deficit and limiting beliefs, they were showing up in their business, and so it gave them the motivation to change because they could see how these things, by changing them, would give them success, direct success in their business. So that's when I became, if you will, Brain Coach Brad. I started focusing on, through all the research, on the entrepreneurial brain, what makes entrepreneurs' brains different. And I developed the strategies to teach other entrepreneurs like I helped myself. So since then, through the clinic and through workshops and through my entrepreneurial brain coaching groups, I've helped scores of entrepreneurs to change their brains and use that to raise the success of their businesses. What I've really done, one person, good friend of mine said, Brad, you're a therapist and you're an entrepreneur. because I didn't mention it, but I've actually been involved in four other startups now over the last number of years. I like to say two very successful businesses and two very successful learning opportunities. But my friend said, Brad, you're an entrepreneur and a therapist. You should think of yourself as an entrepreneurist, because what I've done is take my passion for helping individuals grow, my therapist passion, I'm applying that to entrepreneurs, to business leaders, because then that helps their businesses grow, and that satisfies my passion as an entrepreneur. So that's me. As I studied the research on entrepreneurs and their brains, I discovered the patterns and how anyone can do it. What it takes to grow and develop your brain to have an entrepreneurial brain. And what I mean, again, by an entrepreneurial brain is a brain that looks and works like the brains of successful entrepreneurs. And you can use that to grow your business and success in business. And so that's what you're here for today. Find out how to grow your entrepreneurial brain and get that advantage. So that leads us to the Cliff Notes for the brain. Some of you, this will be brand new. And that's great. You can immediately then grab that new information and use it. For those of you who have heard either me talk before or maybe you think you already know about the brain, then what I'd ask you to ask yourself, are you using everything you know? Are you acting like you know these things? And then look to pick up something today and immediately implement it. And you'll already have noticed that theme of implementation, because that's how you build new habits. So here's the Cliff Notes of the brain. The first thing you need to know if you're going to use brain information to change your business and change your life is you have to understand the concept of neuroplasticity. That's been bandied a lot around in the news in the last few years, so you've probably heard of it. Here's what it means. Your brain can change. That's what it means. Your brain can change. In particular, it is changing all the time. Your thoughts, your emotions, your behaviors of every day are having a measurable difference on the brain. You are what we call rewiring the brain. So that gives a lot of possibility. The problem is that most people rewire their brain today the same way they did yesterday. Now, how does brain wiring happen? The mantra of neuroscience is that neurons that fire together, and that means they activate at the same time, so that if you're in a situation like right now, you're on the phone and you're listening to my voice and you're having certain thoughts and you're having certain emotions, all of those things are activating neurons. And since they're activating at the same time, they're firing together. So neurons that fire together wire together. In addition to being a neat, nifty little rhyme there, it really captures the truth, because if you fire that same set of neurons consistently together, then they increase their connection, and that increases the speed of activation and makes it more likely that when any one set of those neurons fires, the rest of them are going to fire as well. So they're wiring together. So the first thing you need to know is, how do you rewire your brain? How do you change your brain? Well, you need to change what neurons fire at the same time. And then you need to consistently fire the ones you want so that they wire. Excuse me while I cough and take a drink of water. The next thing you need to know is that your brain strives for efficiency. When you're first learning something, if your brain is under scan at that time, we'd see that it's activating in a number of areas. But when you're good at something, that reduces the amount of areas of the brain that activate. The brain wants to turn everything into a habit, turn it into non-conscious processing, and then it's very efficient. So that's great, except what that means is that if right now you don't have a brain of a successful entrepreneur, that means that most of that happening below your awareness, most of it is already unconscious. So you have to change that. Well, how changeable is the brain? Let me tell you a very quick story, one of my favorite stories, and it's not about entrepreneurs at all. And I tell it because it is inspiring about what can happen in the brain. It's a famous story in neuroscience because it's the story of a father of a famous neuroscientist, the Paul Bakke-Rida, eventually became a famous neuroscientist. At the time this story starts, he was a doctor, but not yet a neuroscientist. And his father, who was also a professor, had a stroke in his 60s. And this actually is in the 1960s as well. So it was back at the time when there was this firm belief that the brain couldn't change. And at that time, and actually for many years afterwards, the way they assessed how severe the damage was is that they would have everybody who had a stroke go through rehab immediately after the stroke. But if they didn't respond, then they realized that that meant that the brain was too damaged to respond. So then those people would be relegated to an institution, and the people whose brains weren't damaged enough that they did respond to the rehab, then they would continue rehab, and they would often regain a lot of their functioning. Well, Bakirita's father, Professor Bakirita, didn't respond at all. And so the doc said, "We're really sorry, but your father's brain is so damaged by the stroke that he'll never walk again. He won't regain his speech. He had it lost functioning on entire one side of his body." But they didn't want to put him in an institution. So Paul's younger son, George, took him in. But George couldn't stand to see his father sitting there. And so he started having his father go back and act like a baby. He took him down and started him crawling. He would send marbles across the floor to him and make him hit him with his fingers of his good hand. Make him respond with the hand that couldn't respond. He would tie his good hand down and force him to attempt to feed himself with his bad hand, even though he'd splash food all over himself like a baby. The neighbors were horrified. They said, "You're treating Professor Bakirita like a dog, making him crawl around the garden, or like a baby." But even though George didn't know whether or not any of this would work, his father did begin to respond. And within a year and a half, he actually regained full functioning, to the extent that almost 10 years later, he died of a heart attack, but he died hiking at 9,000 feet. And I list that detail just to show you how much recovery he'd had. He returned to the classroom, he returned to hiking, things like that. And the doctors were excited for them. The doctors said, "Wow, we were wrong. Looks like your father's brain wasn't damaged." But here's the punchline of this whole story, and here's what gives the inspiration for us as people in our lives and as business people for changing habits, changing the brains to those of successful entrepreneurs. Because here's what happened when they did an autopsy on Professor Bakirita's brain. The pathologist was during the autopsy called his son, Paul Bakirita, in and said, "Paul, you got to see this." Because when they looked at his brain, 97% of the connections between the brain and the spinal cord, governing all the ability to move and to recover his abilities, those were all dead. They were all damaged and continued to be damaged 10 years after the stroke. His brain was completely damaged. But what happened is that George had stumbled on exactly the formula for rewiring the brain. He had put his father back through exactly the right amount of demand, and the brain had responded and taken areas that did completely different things, but they had wired them to do what his brain needed to do. So if a brain can recover from a stroke, it can recover from our years of wiring it to be an unsuccessful entrepreneur or wiring it to think like a manager, as we'll talk about in a moment. So I want you to be inspired about the possibilities. And the key is, again, you have to believe in the ability for the brain to change. You have to rewire it by changing what fires at the same time. In particular, you have to do it at the right level of demand. You have to layer it so you're constantly putting enough demand on the brain for it to change without getting overloaded. And then you have to make that into a habit. So now you have the brain basics, and you know what's possible. So I'm going to go into what you're here for, to improve your business by learning to grow an entrepreneurial brain, change your brain so you think and respond like a successful entrepreneur. And here's how we're going to do it. First, I'm going to focus in on one advantage that defines the brain of a successful entrepreneur. And I'll show you how to get that advantage for yourself. it probably won't surprise you that entrepreneurs are more tolerant of risk. We know that. That they take strategic risk. That they're more tolerant of risk than managers, but they're more strategic about risk than unsuccessful entrepreneurs who jump into things. And it may surprise you to know that you can see that in the brain. They've actually wired their brains to take that necessary risk strategically for their businesses to succeed. There was a Cambridge study that shows that entrepreneurs' brains, first what they looked at, they showed that they were no different than successful managers when they were dealing with day-to-day decisions. So let me say that again. They took entrepreneurs and successful managers, ones who had run major companies but who had never been involved in startups, had never been responsible for the decisions that brought the company at risk. And so they took the managers and the successful entrepreneurs and they compared them while looking at decisions where they were just day-to-day decisions, not bringing the company at risk. And what they found is their brains looked exactly the same and they managed them the same way. But then what they did is they looked at them when there were decisions that involved risk. So what are we talking about when we talk about risk? What kind of risk? Well, there's lots of examples in the day-to-day. You can probably think in your own business about what are the kinds of decisions that bring about risk. So you could be a solopreneur or a sole entrepreneur, and you might be considering adding a contractor to do more of the delivery of services to customers. So you can focus on marketing, running the business, and you're having somebody else do the actual delivery of your services. But right now, your revenue doesn't support both of you. So that would be a risk. Do you take that on, or do you hold back and lose the opportunity to grow? You might have a decision, say if you're a bigger company with employees, you might have a decision about expanding to a new location or moving from having a home office to an office with a lease. So you're taking on a financial commitment, and that brings about risk if you can't manage to have the revenue to support that. Or you might be expanding into a new niche in your business, but you want to hold on to your competitive advantage in the other niche. So these are lots of examples. That's what I mean when I talk about risk. And so here's what they did. They looked at their brains in that case, and what they found is that the entrepreneurs were very different. They were much more tolerant of risk than the managers. And in a separate study, they looked and saw what was happening in the brain at that time. And what they saw was that the managers were only using the part of their brain that was involved in linear, straightforward thinking, the same part of the brain that they used in the other type of decision making. And entrepreneurs used that part too, but they also used the part of their brain that's involved in solutions and innovation, both exploitation is called and exploration. So they used both parts. Now, that's a little bit of a simplification, but that is what they saw in the brain, that the entrepreneurs were using more of their brain, and that allowed them to be taking these strategic risks where the managers were not taking them. And that's what gave them an advantage. So here's a question to ponder on while I take a drink of water. How do you grow your brain to take strategic risks, and do you even want to? Maybe you want to think like a manager. Maybe that's something you think of as part of your personality. But if you want to be an entrepreneur, you can't think like a manager because you won't take the necessary risks. And what will happen? Well, then you end up being risk averse. So is this familiar? It might cause you to doubt yourself, and you end up with paralysis by analysis, as they say. Or you move in stops and starts. You have a knot in your stomach all the time. So think for a moment. Is this dead on for you? Is this you? Or, and I know there's those of you on the call like this too, it's possibly it's not you, but you still have a hunch that you don't have the brain of a successful entrepreneur because you're too comfortable with risk. It doesn't faze you at all. In that case, you don't have the brain of a manager, but you have what I call the brain of an unsuccessful entrepreneur. Because too much comfort with risk brings its own business problems. And those of you like that are probably recognizing this. So you avoid the necessary work it takes to really evaluate risk. You jump in. You get excited about new things and you jump into them. But you know you should look at the details and be more careful. But you procrastinate about that. Managers might procrastinate about taking the risk and making decisions, but unsuccessful entrepreneurs procrastinate on looking at the numbers, for example, or getting appropriate advice, because that's what makes them feel uncomfortable. And so they charge ahead and they lose money based on poor decisions. So either way, whether you recognize that you have the brain of a manager or you have the brain of an unsuccessful entrepreneur, you are wiring that to continue. Because remember, your brain, what fires together, wires together. And the more you do that, you continue the thoughts and emotions you're used to creating in risk situations. You perpetuate it in your brain. You keep it going. And in your business challenges, unless you stop it now and you learn to grow your entrepreneurial brain. And that's what you're here for, the three-step process. And remember, at the end of the call, I'm going to give you the shocking approach to immediately reduce your stress. It's really an application of the three-step process, but it involves a lot of a fun, a playful piece to it. So here we go. Three steps to grow your entrepreneurial brain so you can strategically manage risk and make good decisions for your business. Now, these three steps work to grow your entrepreneurial brain in other ways as well, other than just risk. And I teach that in my entrepreneurial brain coaching groups and in my book, Your Entrepreneurial Brain, 17 Brain Secrets for Business Success. But today, we're focusing on the advantage of the successful entrepreneur in managing risk. Three steps. Now, notice that you may recognize some of the steps. So watch for what it says about the brain that they're combined like this, that we're doing the combination just like this. So three steps. The first step is to transform your attention. Attention mediates or controls the impact of the environment on the brain. That includes conscious attention, what you're paying attention to and you know you're paying attention to it, but also unconscious attention, what you've determined is important for your brain to register, what you've told it to pay attention to. And then again, remember, it's made that automatic, so it's not even a conscious process. It's just those are the neurons that fire at the same time. So for example, if you think like a manager, you've wired your brain to pay attention to dangers, to what can go wrong, and not to solutions and possibilities. You're just using the part of your brain that is scanning for the dangers and making safe decisions. So you have to intentionally set what your brain should pay attention to in risky situations. So if I were you, if you have the ability to write this down, in addition to the other notes you're taking, I'd write this down. The distinguishing feature of mastery is the ability to make different distinctions. What does that mean? When someone has reached mastery, and you've probably all heard about the 10,000 hours of deliberate practice it takes to reach mastery, they see things that other people don't. They make distinctions that other people don't make, and they can respond to those automatically. So they've transformed their attention, so their brain filters in different levels of information. A traditional example some of you may have heard of before is the example that the Inuit language, the Inuits who lived up in what's called Alaska, the Inuit language, I just realized how funny that sounded. The Inuit lived and continue to live in the area that's now Alaska. So they have, that language has multiple different words for snow. So So I only have one word for snow, and I'm happy to have never lived in an area where I needed more than one word. But that, what does that mean? It means I can't make the distinctions that I might need to keep me safe if I lived in a world where knowing what kind of snow I'm walking on or going out in, that could be the difference between life and death. So that someone who is a mastery, who has transformed their attention, they make different distinctions. So that is the attempt to inspire you to actually take the steps to transform your attention. Now, how do you do that? Well, even though there's a total three-step process, it's actually three different ways inside transforming your attention, three different ways that you can do this. So the first one is one you've heard of before, and that's set goals. Except you're doing it for a different reason. What you're doing is you're setting the goals, in particular, you're setting goals of who do you want to be? What kind of characteristics do you need? And that affects your attention. When you're telling yourself, well, I need to be someone, for example, who is paying attention to the numbers involved in a risk situation. And I need to be somebody who looks for how risky something is and how to do it while mitigating the risk. If that's the kind of person you want to be, then you're telling your brain to look for those things. So the first thing you want to do is to set goals and write them down. It's very important to write them down, and all the research supports the idea of at least some of the time doing them in handwriting. Typing them is great if we use computers all the time, but handwriting activates different parts of the brain. So it's actually good to write them and type them both because you're activating different parts of the brain. So set your goals to affect your attention. The second way to transform your attention is look at the goals, and then you want to write down why would you want to be that kind of person and reach those goals. What difference would it make? What values of yours would it fulfill? And again, write this down as well. Write it and type it at different times. What this process does is it brings the emotion. Tony Robbins likes to say that if you can get a big enough why, a big enough reason to do something, then you'll find the strategies and you'll make it happen. So this second step to transform your attention is to bring in the emotion. Write it down. Then the third thing is get a role model. So if you want to transform your attention, set your goals, write down the why, and then identify who already exemplifies that. Attention is powerfully driven by vivid role models. And to fully model them, to follow your role model, pay attention to what they show that they believe, for example, about risk in this case. What do they believe about it? And what are their habits about it? What do they do? And then follow that. What do you need to believe and what habits do you need to have? So step one, if you want to rewire your brain, you want to transform your attention. That's the first step. The second step is to transform your metaphors and your stories. So the brain is hardwired to be affected by metaphor and story. What are you saying this is like? What are you saying risk is like? What are you saying the story you're telling yourself about what it will mean if you make this decision and it doesn't go the way you want? The most powerful way to transform the meaning of an event is through the story or metaphor you're telling about it. So pay attention. For you, do you talk about risk as if risk is getting too close to the edge? If you get too close to the edge, you fall off and you die. Or is business like a death match? And if you take risks, your competition will kill you. They'll wipe you off the face of the earth. Those metaphors tell your brain to pay attention to the danger. So you can see how the two steps line up. They connect with each other. Or for you, is life and is business a journey? And risks are an opportunity to learn. And what you're here for is learning. And every time you learn that you have the opportunity to advance. Do you believe that good decisions come from experience and experience comes from making bad decisions? So you're okay if you can make a decision and you then learn from it. So transform your metaphors and your stories. That's step two if you want to be able to grow your entrepreneurial brain, because these things will change your brain in measurable ways. So step three, then, is to transform your habits. Remember what I said about the brain wanting to turn everything into habits. So this is the most important step, the first to support this one. Your habits change the brain. If you're successful in business already, then you've built up some of the brain of a successful entrepreneur. And that's because of your habits. If you're struggling in business, if you procrastinate or you don't do the most important things, you put off dealing with your financials, or you put off analyzing risk, or you put off making decisions, any of those, that's because of your habits. If you think like a manager, you have a habit of responding to risk by looking for ways to avoid it, not live with it. If you think like an unsuccessful entrepreneur, you have a habit of embracing risk and jumping into it and not taking the steps to mitigate it. So you have to interrupt the old habits, and then you have to condition the brain to respond with positive optimism to risk, so that it's cautious but excited by risk, that you stay present and fully in solution mode. Every time you see a risk, you're asking yourself, how can I do the best with this situation? How can I take action and get the benefits of this risk situation while also minimizing the potential danger to my business? Then you have to repeat that. You have to follow the examples of your role models and condition it until it's automatic and consistent. So those are the three steps. You have the three steps of transforming your attention, making sure that you write down your goals, write down why you want to achieve those goals, why you want to be the kind of person who can do those goals, and you want to have a role model that you can look at her or his habits and beliefs and then model them. Then you want to transform your metaphors, your story, and these are a part of transforming your beliefs. Then lastly, you want to transform your habits. So those are the ways you do that. I gave some ideas of how you would actually do that. Now, this is a really good tool, even if I say so myself. Each of these parts are put together in a way to maximize the change to the brain. And if you use it and you practice it again and again, you get your role model, you write the things down, you practice it, you can literally condition your brain to respond like successful entrepreneurs. And you can have the advantage that they have in this situation with risk. And then you can do the same thing in other areas where you look at successful entrepreneurs and you realize that you haven't yet been like them. But here's a challenge for you. Now, I'm a really optimistic guy. Those of you who know me know that's true. And I'm really positive. And I've also learned some things along the way. And here's what I've learned. Most of you listening to this won't do it. Most of you won't do it. Most of you won't practice it long enough. Maybe you might practice it once or twice, but not long enough to condition it, and then you'll think, oh, that tool doesn't work, or you'll jump onto another tool. So be honest. Have you ever been on another call or been in a seminar or watched a video and you learned something that you believed, wow, that could really change my business, but you didn't do it? You got too busy, other things happened, you didn't practice enough, you got excited about something else. What stops you from really getting the benefit is not conditioning it, not doing it systematically, in particular just thinking about it and think that, oh, well, yeah, I know those things, and if I think about those things, it'll change me. No, the brain research shows us what works. So here's the good news. Here's the best way to implement this strategy or any other one that's going to change the brain. The first thing is you want to get in a group. Groups have transformative powers. So you want to be in a group process. The research shows that if you're going to change habits, you're going to change the way you've been, then the most powerful way to do it is in a group. Now, a coach functions as a group sometimes, so that there's some benefit to just having a coach, like a group of one other person. But it's even more powerful to have a full group process. Then the second thing you have to do is you have to systematically identify and change the beliefs that were supporting the old way of doing it. You have to figure out what are the beliefs that are consistent with that and what are the beliefs that a successful entrepreneur has instead. And then you have to actually use the process. Research just showed us how you can change beliefs. We change beliefs all the time, but most of us don't do it intentionally. So you have to intentionally change your beliefs. Then thirdly, you have to identify and change the habits. And this is even the habits of how you go about things. So this is not just the tool we just talked about, but it's changing a whole series of habits. And that's how you implement and change anything. And that's exactly what I do in my entrepreneurial brain coaching groups. So I want to talk about those just a little bit as an example of how this works. So my entrepreneurial brain coaching groups, they're a four-month program. So first of all, I make people commit to 4 months because that is long enough to implement the habits and to have the feedback loop coming back so you're actually making the changes and seeing how it works and then maintaining the momentum. So we meet twice a month for 2 hours. That's in here in Portland, and then also I have people coming in virtually into the group through teleconferencing. A group of 8 people select entrepreneurs who are committed to changing their beliefs and habits. So the group process, first of all, what do? In the group process, we're utilizing the mirroring power of a group so that the entrepreneurs see each other in the conversation. So in 2 hours, twice a month, we're together and everybody is talking about what's happening for them. And there's a mirroring effect that allows people to benefit from what other people, either their mistakes or their learnings. Secondly, there's an accountability factor that when you get in the group and you make commitments to what you're going to do differently, then you're much more likely to carry it out. And then thirdly, there's the benefit of the expert with me in the group. So in my entrepreneurial brain coaching groups, we have a maximum of 8 people so that everybody can get the attention from me and from each other. And everybody has to go through an application process because I want to make sure that everybody, if you're going to be in a group, you want to make sure that everybody is committed to not only their own success, but other people's success. So they're committed to supporting each other through the difficulties of systematically identifying and changing their limiting beliefs and habits. In order to improve their risk-taking, to improve their optimism, to improve their habits of follow-through. We have people working on habits of cold calling, habits of sales processes, habits of working with employees. We have people working on a whole series of different things because everybody's working on different processes. So our elements, in addition to the group process, is we create a feedback loop so that everybody sets a goal for what they want to accomplish. And this is really important if you want to make a change. This is why you have to write down your goals. Because if you don't write down your goals and then measure what your progress is toward them, then you can't actually know whether you're changing. And something really interesting happens in our entrepreneurial brain coaching groups when people say, here's my goal, and here's what I'm going to measure. I'm going to come back every 2 weeks and tell you how I'm doing. What happens is that drives up all the stuff that's in the way of getting those goals. It drives up what are the limiting beliefs. It drives up the habits. And then you're able to actually work on them and change them. So we measure the goals. We create accountability. Then all of this is based on how the brain works. So that one of the really important things is that we have to make unconscious habits conscious. You may already have goals, but you've also have habits of paying attention to other things. So you don't even know what your habits are that are getting in your way. So one of the things that we do in the group is that I send out texts at an irregular basis to people in the group. And that comes in, it's a distraction, but it's a distraction that tells you focus on your goal, or a distraction that helps you identify what are the beliefs that are happening right now. What are the habits that you're involved in? So I'm working with people working with the group to help them become aware of those things. Then I do that on an irregular basis, so they never know when it's happening. So they actually are learning their brain. They're learning in their brain what it is that they need to be paying attention to. Then I have teaching videos. In addition to the groups, each week there's a 10 to 15 minute teaching video of material that we have covered. Sometimes we've covered it in the group and sometimes we haven't, but it's to give people opportunity to watch it over and over. And for example, how to then break up old beliefs or how to break up the habits. And we actually practice together. So by the end of that, about halfway through, we start working to systematically change the beliefs and change the habits and make them more like successful entrepreneurs. That's what we do in the group. And I actually have one of those groups starting next week. I'd like to invite you all to join me in that group. We still have some spots starting. It's actually this week. Starts on Thursday. I wanted to get this call in because we still have a couple of spots left in that group. And I want to make sure that the right people are in that group. So the group ordinarily is priced at $1,600, but it's a new format. And so for the groups starting this coming week, starting on Thursday of this week, we're pricing it at $1,396. But for this call, I'm offering a special early bird discount. And I offered it on my last call, and we had people sign up for it, but it's only people now on this call who can get it. And that is a monthly payment of $249 a month for 4 months. You commit to all 4 months, but you pay monthly. So I want to give you the urgency in the group. So $249 a month for the next 4 months. And I want to give you a couple other bonuses to sign up immediately. What I'm going to suggest that you do is if you sign up in the next 24 hours, you get a free session with me. Normally those sessions are $150 for 50 minutes, but you'll get a free 60-minute session for me to use to accelerate your progress in the group. The other thing that you'll get is a copy of my chapter from my upcoming book. Some of you already have the chapter on metaphors, but this is a new chapter. The group starts Thursday from 4 to 6 p.m. And then they immediately meet again the following week, the first week in September, and then they're the first and third week for September, October, November, and then we end the first week in December. I set it up that way for two reasons. One, I like having the first 2 weeks right next to each other, even though it's a little irregular, and then also it means that we don't go that deeply into December. So you can dial in if you're not in Portland, or if you're traveling, you can come in on teleconference, and then the group sections are also recorded that you can watch afterwards. So before I teach you the technique I promised about stress, I want to say one more thing about the group. I'm really excited about these groups. These groups are very powerful. I know there's a couple of people on this call who are in the current group, and we've been getting great feedback on it. And I want you to ask yourself, do you have the habits and beliefs you need? And if not, might this be right for you? And if you're not sure, something I'd like to offer, so I haven't offered before, but I've never done a teleclass that's only 3 days before the group starts. So I'd like to offer people, I do these free 15-minute consults to help people be sure of which of the things that I do is the right one for them. And if you're unsure whether the group is the right one for you, then you can call or email us today and set up a 15-minute consult in the next 48 hours, and I'll hold the bonuses for you. Ordinarily, you only get the bonuses you only get the live bonus with me if you sign up today, and you only get the other bonuses if you sign up in the next 48, 72 hours, but I'll hold those bonuses for you if you sign up for a consult, because then we can determine whether the group is the right thing for you. What have we done? Before I give you the last technique, I want to remind you, we talked about how the brain changes. Can you remember that? Changes by wiring neurons together by firing in them at the same time. So you've got to identify the thoughts, emotions, and behaviors that are firing off at the same time, and you've got to change those so that you're firing off what you want and you're doing it repeatedly. of the best ways to do that to grow the entrepreneurial brain is to do this intentional three-step process. Transform your attention by writing down goals, writing down why you want to be the person who can achieve those goals, and who's your role model, what's their habit and beliefs. That's step one to transform attention. Step two, transform your metaphors and stories. And step three, transform your habits. And we've talked about how the group does that. In the last 3 minutes here, I want to give you a great technique you can implement today. If you want to change your habits, it's really helpful to decrease your stress. And stress creeps up on most people, and they don't even know it's there, and they don't know how to change it. So there's a principle in habit formation that we implement in the group process, and it's called piggybacking. And that means, that's my word for it, what that means is that one of the easiest ways to build a new habit is to link it to a habit you already have. And it's very useful to at least to multiple times a day if you checked in on your stress level and you asked yourself, now how good am I at stress management right now? How calm am I? On a 1 to 10, where 1 would be not calm at all, I'm really stressed out, and 10 would be, oh, I'm totally on top of it. Where am I? And you might say, well, I'm about a 3 right now because I'm pretty stressed. So then you ask yourself, how can I get to a 4 in stress management right now? What could I do that would make myself calmer and more able to manage my stress? If you just did that process multiple times a day, what happens is your brain starts to make it a habit and to be constantly checking and then immediately doing the things like deep breathing or taking a moment to be grateful, all these things. There's a bunch of things that reduce the stress. It's just that most people don't remember to do them. So what does piggybacking do? How would you remember to ask yourself this question? How would you remember to check in, slow down, take a deep breath, and ask yourself how you could become just a little better right at the moment at managing stress? And by the way, it's relevant. You'll notice that I'm going in kind of a unusual way. I'm having 10 be really calm and 1 be stressed, because I want you to be thinking about how what you can do to be better at managing your stress, be calmer. So you can piggyback that by connecting this new habit to something you already do multiple times a day. And what I can tell you is that all of you go to the bathroom multiple times a day. So I told you this is kind of an outrageous thing, but we all do it, and that's something you already do. So if the next time you were to go to the bathroom, you just, as you're walking, you ask yourself, okay, now, how calm am I right now? What can I do to be a little calmer? So if you take a moment right now and you imagine doing that, imagine that the next time you walk to the bathroom, you're going to ask yourself that question. And you put that into practice, you can actually then build a habit. You just have to repeat that habit, and you will immediately reduce your stress. It's 12 o'clock, and I'm really grateful for everybody for your engagement in the call today. I want to offer you an invitation now to ask any kind of questions that you might have. I'll stay on for at least 15 minutes to take questions, and all these will still be recorded. I want to let you know that all of you will have received an email a couple minutes ago talking about the group that's starting on Thursday. It doesn't include the special offer I made just today to get a free consult to talk about the group, and that will hold the bonuses, but that's just for you guys. And if you're listening to this recorded, then you still have an opportunity. If it's, what is today, Monday, if it's Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, you still have an opportunity, but the moment you listen to it, you've got to call in to set up your free consult. So let's take questions now, and I'll have to unmute you first. Actually, I'll teach you how you can unmute yourself, but before I do that, I want to remind you all that there are some people who may take a moment to ask questions, so I'll respond to the first questions, but anytime that there's a pause, I'm going to let the pause kind of lengthen to make sure that everybody who has questions has time to think those through. So if there's a pause for a moment, just jump right in, hit *5 and unmute your phone, and you can ask a question. So there's a pause right now, and I'll just let that linger for a moment, hit *5, jump in, ask a question. I can see that we still have a number of people on the phone, although we did have a few people who had to leave early for their meetings. So feel free to ask any questions at all. I'll talk about the brain as long as we go, either ask questions about the brain specifically, you can ask questions about how to implement the three-step process, you can ask questions about the group, you can ask questions about the stress management technique. Just in case there's a problem with the unmuting, I'll give it a couple more moments of silence and then I'll unmute everybody's phones just in case there's something problem with the unmuting. Please go ahead, hit star 5 and unmute your phone and ask questions. Although I have a deep capacity to tolerate silence from ears as a therapist, I do want to respect everybody's time. If there are no more questions for today, then I'm going to go ahead and unmute everybody's phone for a moment so we can, if anybody has a last things to say.
Star 5. I tried the star 5. It didn't seem to work.
Okay.
Can you illustrate what you mean by transforming a metaphor?
Absolutely. So, and I apologize that for the technology here. So I'm glad that I did go ahead and unmute. I imagine other people were wanting to ask questions too. So, yes. So transforming a metaphor, and actually in my book chapter on that's available on our website lifetimeoptimization.com, you can download the chapter. I'll talk some details about this, but it's a very powerful process to be aware of your metaphor and then go with it while changing it. So here's an example from the chapter, one of my favorites that happened with a client. So this entrepreneur was talking about how she felt like that there was a time of extreme risk in her business, and she felt like she was walking a tightrope without a pole. And so I said, okay, great. Go ahead and imagine that metaphor. You're using it in your language. It means it's affecting your brain. It's at a metaphorical level, because the brain actually is wired to respond to that. I can't really explain that right now, but I do that in the group. The brain's actually wired to respond to metaphor. So she visualized herself then, okay, that she is on a tightrope and she doesn't have a pole. And then I said, now, holding on and accepting the truth of that metaphor, because that reflects some of what you feel about the world right now, imagine that there are also two more tightropes at either level, eye level, on either side of your body, and reach up and just grab them with your hands. So now you're still walking a tightrope. You still don't have a pole, but what you have is you have balance because you're holding on to two things. And immediately, she had this sense of relief. And I said, now, if you were to believe in this new metaphor that there were additional tightropes on either side that you could hold on to, what would those be representing? And she said, oh, well, she said, I have a lot of resources and support in the business. I have my coach. I actually have some fallback position if something were to go wrong. And all of a sudden, she was able to remind herself of the things she did believe about the situation that weren't being illustrated in her initial metaphor. So that's an example of whatever metaphor you realize you're saying, accept it first, then ask yourself, now how can I be creative with this? How could I change the metaphor so it reflects other things I believe about the situation? Is that helpful?
Yes, thank you.
Great. And I want to let me stay with that just for a moment, because it ties into the concepts of beliefs, and these are really crucial, and we deal with these in the groups, and I deal with them in individual brain coaching, because limiting beliefs, there's a lot of talk about limiting beliefs, but most people don't realize that we all have conflicting beliefs about almost everything we're dealing with, that the best way to describe things is that part of us believes this or part of us believes that, because like I mentioned, growing up, I would have said I didn't really believe that to be a successful business person, you had to give up time with your family. But because that was what I'd seen, that was a fear for me. That was a belief that was one of the beliefs I had about things. And these beliefs often show up in our metaphors, because our metaphors are a reflection often of just some of our beliefs. So by working on metaphors, you also can start to identify and work on the beliefs. And these two processes support each other. Great question. Thank you. Any other questions? I realize that apparently the Star 5 process wasn't really working for people, so do we have any other questions? We did have a major exodus right around noon for lunchtime, so I'm going to go ahead and wrap up the call at this point. I look forward to seeing all of you, at least virtually, on some other teleclass or in the group. And remember, whatever you took today, identify one thing and commit to yourself to put it into action, whether it's the whole three-step process, whether it's the process of reducing stress by checking your stress every time you have to go to the bathroom, whatever it is, identify one thing to start implementation, because that's the process. The 10,000 hours of deliberate practice has to start with the first step of practice. Thanks very much for everybody for being on the call. This is Brain Coach Brad signing off.
Thanks, Brad.